Hi, this is John Stone from 10,000 Blades, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org. All the best of food and drink, a glass of wine, a smile, a wink. Don't have a cow, don't make a stink, it's Lucy in the kitchen sink.
Hey, New Haveners, and welcome back to another episode of Kitchen Sink. I'm your host, Lucy Gelman, and today we're getting into something that I intended to get into like months ago, and it just never happened. But to me, it feels more important than ever now that we have the impending Trump presidency. I don't like to say those words. They make my skin crawl a little bit. But let me tell you who I have in the studio with me today. I have Amina Bhatt. She's a junior at Yale. Rashid Akbari, he's a freshman at Yale, and Stella Shannon, she's also a junior at Yale. And what they are united by, other than probably working right around finals, so I'm doubly grateful to have them in the studio, is that they are all members and really hardworking members of Students of Salaam, a group that is pairing up with Iris and Sumaya Khan at Southern Connecticut State University, and maybe some other community groups for a series of cooking classes that that engage refugee chefs. So I'm very, very excited about that. And my first question is, what is Students of Salaam for our listeners? Because I hadn't heard about it until I was on Facebook one night and I saw that there was this cooking class happening and I thought, I have to get on that like right away.
Stella speaking. And first, Lucy, thank you so much for having us this morning. We're really honored to be here. So Students of Salaam, we also just call it SOS. It's a New Haven-based organization that my co-president Amina and I actually founded last fall. And so what we noticed in New Haven is that the city's a sanctuary city. It receives 80% of New Haven's refugees of Connecticut's refugees. And we wanted to figure out a way to help engage New Haven, help engage Yale students, and help really create an integral community between all these different groups. And so coming from Missoula, Montana, a small city, I understand the importance of really bringing multiple voices together in order to help use education and community events to help build ties between all different members of a community, especially when you see really changing demographics. And so SOS kind of seeks to work towards this mission, and we do that in two main ways.
Hi, everyone. It's Amina. I'm originally from Lawrenceville, New Jersey, and SOS is something that Estelle and I and our whole group have worked on over here to do two main things. The first thing that we do is we go into local schools here in New Haven and work specifically with the Arabic and French-speaking populations to provide a liberal arts curriculum. So ever since the refugees have come here in New Haven, there's been this huge gap in the school system where the schools haven't really been able to provide a proper education for foreign language speaking students. And so that's where SOS comes in. I, alongside a lot of other Yale students, work together to help mentor these students and work with them to challenge them academically. And the second way that we actually work through SOS with the New Haven community is through our community events. And so SOS hosts at least one community event a month, usually in partnership with the New Haven Free Public Library. And so it can be anything from a movie screening to talk to what this month, which is a cooking class. This month is very exciting because we're going to be having two Syrian moms come together to showcase different Syrian dishes and cook them in front of a class. We've had such a huge response from the New Haven community about this event. It's been really exciting.
Yeah. And so I want to talk a little bit about this, because one thing that I think some people in the New Haven community feel is that they are estranged from Yale, but also that Yale is estranged from them. And so I see this event, which is, as I understood it, the first in hopefully a series taking place on Saturday, December 11th at the New Haven Free Public Library, this cooking event, is really bridging the two in a beautiful way and letting people in the New Haven community, you know, wherever they are, whatever ward they're in, know that, yes, we have these refugees and immigrants coming into our community, and they really are a boon to the community in several different ways. So I can see you nodding avidly, Amina, so I'm going to throw it back to you.
That's exactly what our mission is with our community events. We really want to work with the New Haven community, and I think as Yale students, we understand that we're transient and that we're only here for about 4 years. And so we really thought it was important to work with the New Haven community to bridge the gap and to make sure that people are conversing, whether it be kids just playing a soccer match or coming together to cook some nice dishes.
So within that, I also wanted to, before we went on and talked about this event specifically, but also how all of you came to be involved with SOS, Students of Salaam. I love that idea of kind of throwing, you know, someone throwing the life raft or the little lifesaver thing. Rashid, I wanted to ask you, you're a tutor with Students of Salaam and you're a freshman at Yale. So it sounds like just jumped into this as soon as you got to campus or shortly thereafter. So tell me about what you do.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rashid. And yeah, so I first came in already knowing I wanted to do something to give back because I remember being that kid and navigating through public school. And I wanted to be able to use where I'm at Yale and have an impact on students who are having that similar experience. So I got involved through SOS. I already knew Amina, and she's the co-president. So she kind of told me more about the group. And once I went into their first meeting, I immediately knew this is something I want to do. So on the tutoring side of the group, we go into local elementary schools. The one I go to is Fairhaven, and we work with the refugee kids, and we take them out of their 30 students class size and take them into smaller focus groups. So I have about 7 students, and we really try to provide them with a liberal arts curriculum, and this focuses on poetry, self-expression, art, and we try to give them what their classroom sometimes doesn't provide because, you know, classes are mostly focused on STEM and writing, and we try to focus more in on the self-expression. So our other goal is to ease their transition in public school in America, and we do that by providing them a safe space. So I always, you know, we always start out by asking them how their day was, and we give them a chance to talk about their background and the things that they're going through in this new environment. And we make sure that they're comfortable in school, and we address any problems they have with whether it's bullying. So one specific story is 2 of my students, they wear hijabs, and the other kids in their class were teasing them, making fun of them for it. So I went to her teacher, told her the problem, and she then addressed it and was able to fix it. And so the thing is, like, a lot of these kids they're scared to come out because they think they'll be victimized. And by providing them a resource, another student, they're more open to come out and fix these problems.
And I mean, I'm wondering if you can address for listeners. So I think some of our listeners, some of our readers at the New Haven Independent may have in their heads, you know, unfortunately, because of sort of mass media coverage, a monolithic image of what a refugee is or what an immigrant is. And in New Haven, so there were swastikas painted at Wilbur Cross High School, which is close to East Rock Park. I've heard reports of at Edgewood School, people saying to young Muslim women who wear headscarves in their classrooms, go back to where you came from. And they've said, well, I was born here. And even if I wasn't, that's incredibly injurious. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about some of the stereotypes you've encountered and how you and then I'll open it up to the group, try to fight those.
Right. So one of the stereotypes is that this community isn't theirs. And what we're trying to do is make sure that they know that this is their community. They belong here, and we want them here because they really bring a new view to the classroom. And that's something the teachers should try to embrace, because these students have the experiences that an immigrant or a refugee has gone through is different from that of someone who's been born here. And I know I'm a first generation student, and growing up through public school was much different for me than I know it is for these refugees. So I take whatever challenges I face and kind of amplify that by 10, because these kids, like, I knew up growing up that, you know, I was born in America. I'm from here. But these students, a lot of them are very new, and it's very important to make sure that they know that they belong here, and this is their new home. And that's that's really the key, because once they feel comfortable in the classroom, they're going to be able to start learning and focusing on broadening their minds.
Yeah, and Stella and Amina, so both of you mentioned being from very different parts of the country, actually, Missoula, Montana, and New Jersey. It's, you know, almost different sides of the country, basically. But I'm sure that both of you have encountered, both at Yale and before Yale, stereotypes. And so I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how you're trying to fight those in community events.
Sure. So unlike most of the SOS ambassadors and most of the members of the board, so this is Stella speaking, I myself am not Muslim, so the types of situations that I find myself in are very distinct from the situations that many of the individuals we work with find themselves in. And so I think what I can add to this conversation is just really making it clear that this issue and standing as an ally shouldn't be unapproachable for those who aren't directly affected on a personal level by these types of issues. However, at the same time, many of the individuals that I work with here in New Haven, and much of my childhood has been spent approaching the concept of, how do you redefine home? How do you look at illegality? How do you look at an individual and give them a sense of purpose and value despite the fact that they don't speak English? And this issue really became apparent to me when I was in fourth grade. I lived in a small village in Mexico for a while, and I went to public school there. And then returning to Montana, which is a very white community, and trying to work as best as I could with the Hispanic immigrants to my community, and understanding what it meant for them to be in a completely different environment, however, having someone tell them that they perhaps shouldn't exist in that space, it was something that really touched me, and it was something that I see myself working on for the rest of my life, because I don't feel like I can live in a community where everyone isn't made to feel valued, and I feel that it impacts me, it impacts everyone around me. And I feel very fortunate to be working on a team with, you know, so many incredible individuals. And I'd love to hear, Amina, you know, what you would have to add to that.
I was going to say, Amina, I would love to know for you how, so we say a lot at WNHH, but I've heard this at protests all over town, the personal is political. It just is. And you are not just a woman, but you are Muslim, and you wear hijab. And so for you, Was this something that you were thinking about before coming to Yale?
So I was born and raised in central New Jersey. It's a very diverse community. We have a very large Muslim population, so I never totally felt out of place. But I will say that I definitely felt caught between two worlds, mm-hmm. where my parents were immigrants. They have slight accents and people would look at them a little bit funny. Whereas someone like me, I sound like I'm quote unquote American, but I wear a scarf, and sometimes that seems, but like that they can't fit together in one world. And I remember watching Hannah Montana when I was younger and thinking about her theme song and applying it to my life. And yeah, I have the best of both worlds. Like I can wear my scarf and I can be American too. And I realize now that it's not separate. America is this whole melting pot. And we see that here in New Haven. We see that in various pockets of the country. We always hear like every Tom, Dick and Harry can come to America and make it big. And I think that's something that I really resonate with. And I think that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to work on SOS. It's really bridging the gap and having people see and humanize the issue. And as we talk about a Trump's presidency, and as we talk about how the personal is not political, I think, or the personal is political, I think that's really important, because a lot of what Trump's rhetoric is and what his policies are very personal to me. They affect me in a very personal way. And so it's hard to remove that, because it does seem to be attacking my personhood.
Stella, I can see you hopping in.
Yeah, Amina just reminded me how important the Trump election has been to us articulating and creating our future vision for SOS. And what it really brought me back to was my own hometown and my own community. And so, you know, half of what SOS does is trying to work with communities, not necessarily just with the refugees. And that's particularly because we recognize how important it is to engage and speak with all types of individuals. And so we really, really want to emphasize today, and I want to emphasize to my community back home as we try to start chapters in Montana, is that we're not here to put any specific belief system or ideology in someone's mind, or, you know, shove that down someone's throat. What we want to do is just have a nice space to do some cultural celebration or just have nice conversations. And that is just so important to me, because having grown up in Montana and understanding the really strong love and desire that many individuals in these small towns have for each other and their own neighbors, and then just figuring out how to extend that to these new neighbors, because I know that that capacity exists, and we just have to figure out a way to work towards that in a relatable way that doesn't feel like we're asking to steal someone's job or challenge someone's sense of self.
Exactly.
I just wanted to touch up on this, because on the tutor side, our focus is on transitioning these students in America and into the classroom. And it's important to distinguish the role of transitioning to be more so integration and not assimilation. Because, for instance, with the hijab, like a lot of my students, they wear the hijab, and it's the integration part is to make sure that they know that their hijab does not interfere with, and it does not interfere and with their ability to feel American. If anything, it should make them feel more American, because they're bringing a new perspective. That's very important, and it's
So before we go on, because I want to get into the events that SOS has been doing, and then this event, which brings together culture and cuisine and women, so kind of these mother figures in the Syrian refugee community, which we don't hear about that often. We often hear about men, if you think about, for instance, the New Yorker piece that ran a couple months ago. But first, I want to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. We're streaming live at www.newhavenindependent.org, or you can catch us on your radio dials. I'm Lucy Gelman, and I'm in the studio today with Amina Bhatt, Stella Shannon, and Rashid Akbari. And we're talking about a relatively new group at Yale that sounds like it's expanding in very exciting ways, including going out into the New Haven community, which is one of my favorite things to hear as a townie, and as someone who I think values but has a very complicated relationship with Yale.
Yeah.
Sort of this castle in the middle of the city. So tell me about the the conception of these community events and how they've grown into what will be one happening on Saturday, December 11th.
I think one of the main driving forces behind our community events is to understand that Yale students are not going to be here for too long. And what we really wanted to do is try to make an impact and try to bridge the gap between the new incoming community members, so the new refugees, and the local New Haven community. And so I think we've done this in various ways. We've experimented with having movie screenings, having different talks. And now this month, we're going to be having a cooking class. And I think we're particularly excited about this one because it involves cuisine and experiencing taste and the culture of the Middle East in a very understandable and open and safe setting. And I think that's great for the New Haven community to be opened and experiencing all these different flavors and cultures, and to have these moms come in who don't speak English. We'll have a translator over there, but still understand the human part of the conflict. And I think, especially as you mentioned, the New Yorker piece, I think that's something that really heightened a lot of feelings and a lot of tensions amongst the new refugee population and allies of this population. And I think that's why we really want to work with the community to put on these events.
Sure. And I think what's particularly special about this food event is that it doesn't actually have a political slant. It doesn't even have a tragic or crisis type of slant on it. It's an opportunity to just celebrate cuisine, a hands-on experience. And what was important to us in framing the event that way and crafting the event in that way is that these individuals, they are refugees, and we often talk or speak about them in the context of the tragedies that they've faced, but their life isn't all crisis. They come from real countries with real traditions and real political systems, real educational systems, which is actually one of the tragedies of the fact that the students in New Haven schools don't have Arabic education or education that they can in their language, because they are coming from real political educational systems. And so we want to give an opportunity to celebrate this very real, active, vibrant part of of Syrian life, for example, in this case, because I think that far too often when we look at the Middle East, particularly right now, when we look at Syria, we see it as simply maybe as a state of crisis or a location of victimhood. And I think when we position ourselves in that way, we forget that those individuals have much agency. They're intelligent. They're rational actors. They have a lot to add to our communities. So it's not a burden, simply a burden on New Haven to welcome these people, but it's a really great gift. And there's a lot to be gained. And the first way that we'll try to do that is by teaching how to make some tabbouleh on Saturday, which I believe it might actually be the 10th.
Oh, yeah, it probably is. I'm bad at dates. So there's this event coming up. But I was thinking of something you said, which Chris George, who's the head of IRIS, Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services in New Haven, but of course it serves the entire state of Connecticut, has said, which is a lot of folks in Connecticut, but also, you know, reporters, people from the Associated Press, people from different media outlets want to concentrate on the adversities that refugees are facing as yeah. they're in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And when you break it down to something as simple as cooking, so everyone's got to eat. Not everyone has to cook, but cooking is mm-hmm. probably the most economical way that you get to that everyone's got to eat. And so when you think about that, that's something that is just inherent to being a part of this human web. And so I'm curious how you got connected with these mothers who will be leading the class.
So the mothers that will be leading the class are actually mothers of students that we tutor. And so that's how we first fell into the program. We approached them and asked them if they would be willing to join this cooking class initiative, and they were ready to get on it. They're so sweet. Every time you visit their house, they'll feed you, they'll stuff you. You feel like you're going to your grandmother's
house.
Takes
hours.
Exactly.
And food is I think in many cultures, so I come from a big Jewish family on one side and a big Catholic family on the other, food is love. And exactly. I think that's something that, you know, transcends language.
I think that's a commonality amongst all cultures, where especially in the Middle East and especially in Syrian families, like you'll go to their house, they'll stuff you and you'll leave and you'll be like, oh my God, I ate so much, but it's so delicious. And you're really torn, but you really appreciate that feeling of love. And I know that my grandparents don't live in the United States, and that's something that I really miss. And so being able to feel that with these mothers who take me as their own, and I'm away from home right now, it's really nice and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think it is an act of love, and it's also an act of survival, right? Because we couldn't survive without food. And so I think in some subconscious ideological way, what this event really provides the opportunity to do is to, for a moment, reverse the narrative. The idea that I think that there's, you know, a general sense of we're providing these new individuals in the New Haven community with a new opportunity for survival. But in this moment, it will be the Syrian moms providing sustenance and survival in that moment through the form of food to the individuals who will be a part of the cooking class.
And everyone has a food story. Some people, a lot of people have many, many food stories. And especially as we kind of go into this season that's full of food, whether you celebrate certain holidays or not, it seems that there's always extra food around in this fall season. And so I'm interested to hear from all of you, if cuisine was a big part of your lives when you were growing up, and how so?
Definitely. So my parents are actually from Kashmir. So it's a place in the middle of India and Pakistan, in the middle of the Himalayas. It's this huge, beautiful valley. And so food is a very big part of our culture. At our weddings, we have a 32-course meal. And so it's crazy whenever we go to a Kashmiri wedding, because there's just tons and tons of food. And so I know that my parents and I myself sought to recreate that culture and that love through food here in America. And so my mom, whenever I go home, makes my favorite dishes, one of which is called tzaman. It is similar to Indian paneer or cottage cheese, and it's baked in this tomato gravy. It is so delicious, salty, creamy. It's amazing. I love it. It's my favorite dish ever. And we eat it with naan bread. And so it's just crispy, like South Asian bread. I really like it. And that's my favorite food. I'm a big foodie myself. So I will travel to New York. I'm really grateful to live here in New Haven right now, because we have such great pizza. I'm always on the hunt for good ice cream. Earth Use has come by over here in New Haven. That's been a great addition. So yeah.
Great. And just before we go to both of you, I also want to say, do you cook? And this is something that that Stella and Rashid, I'm going to be asking the two of you too. Was that part of your, you know, growing up, did you learn to cook? Was that something that was passed down through your mom? I think a lot of people think of cooking as passed down matrilineally, but sometimes it's passed down patrilineally too.
Sure. Well, speaking for the matrilineal, patrilineal distinction. So I grew up in an Italian-Austrian home, and food was an incredibly important part of my upbringing, particularly because my father, it's his family that's Italian. And so he would cook all the time.
Oh, wow.
And so it was really neat because from a young age, I didn't really have a clear gender distinction when it came to food and cooking. And I would cook with my dad a lot. So we would roll out pasta by hand and, you know, make sure that all the noodles were very thin, cut the thin pieces of spaghetti. I was terrible at cutting it. Mine were always very misshapen.
But that's okay.
It is okay. And I think that's the beautiful thing about food because, you know, you can't really make a mistake. I once made sugar cookies with salt, and I would say that's quite a mistake. But I think when I think back to my childhood, I remember feeling my dad's hands in terms of learning how to roll out cinnamon dough, roll dough for cinnamon rolls or gnocchi or pie dough and all of the imperfections that come along with not making a perfect lattice, but having, you know, maybe some of the crust fall off or you rolled your pizza dough too thin. So there's a small hole in the middle. But all of those things still gave us sustenance and life. And that's something that I miss in college is not necessarily having access to a kitchen. But I think Amina is very innovative. She always tries to make her own avocado toast, despite the fact that we don't have kitchens or necessarily access to those sorts of resources.
Yeah. So I come from an Afghani background, and in Afghan culture, food is kind of a way of showing you care about someone. So if you go to someone's house and you don't eat, it's very disrespectful. So even if, like, if I go over to my aunt's house and I already ate, I make sure to eat as much as I can because I know I won't get that kind of food. That kind of food comes very scarcely. And my favorite dish is rabali palau. So it's a type of rice with carrots and raisins. And it's always coupled with a myriad of kebabs. So you have chicken kebab, lamb kebab, and that's kind of the one thing I know how to make and how to prepare. Other than that, you know, it's all up to my mom. And it's kind of like, it shows a commonality between all cultures. Like food is like you've been saying, a form of love, and like sharing food with someone is a form of telling them, hey, I care about you and I want you to be full and I want you to overeat because that shows that I love you even more than I say I do.
And did all, so we heard from Stella that she learned to cook partly from her dad, but for the two of you, Amina and Rashid, was it passed down? Did you feel like matrilineally, patrilineally, a little bit of both? You mentioned going to your aunt's house, for instance.
Yeah. So kebab cooking in Afghan culture is kind of seen as a more of a masculine side. And I think I've learned it like just standing around the grill whenever I'm at my uncle's house, and more of the rice side or the dish, other types of dishes are more on the maternal side, I believe. But my mom completely, like most Afghan women completely transcend that. And, you know, their kebab cooking is way better than, I know my mom's kebab cooking is way better than my dad's, but I wouldn't tell that to his face.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, it, I just saw the first part of the series Cooked, which is Michael Pollan, who is also the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma. But it's about fire. And he kind of says men have this thing about fire where it's like they have to show that it's like peeing all over a tree. You know, it's like they have to show that they are masters of the pit or the fire, or the open flame in some way. And so I think that's that is something that transcends culture and very much you see different men sort of acting out and doing that. But Amina, I saw that you wanted to jump in.
Yeah. So growing up, I definitely learned some things from both of my parents. My dad learned to cook out of necessity. He came to America as a young college student, lived on his own and didn't really know much, but learned how to make a few dishes that he knows really well. But I think a lot of where I learned to cook comes from Food Network. I was a young budding foodie who wanted to be a chef until the age of 15, honestly. Loved to watch Food Network, Ina Garten, like Barefoot Contessa, all the Jada De Laurentiis. I was obsessed with her and watching these shows unwrapped. And so I was really interested in the history behind food and how to make it and the science behind it. And so I think that's why I really particularly like baking.
Yeah, well, and that brings us, I think, into the integration of culture. But Stella, I saw that you wanted to jump in, so I don't want to cut you off.
Sure. So just hearing Rashid and Amina both speak about how important food had been in their homes made me really realize when I came to understand how important food could be from a cultural perspective, which sounds like it actually leads directly into what you were about to ask us about.
Oh, yes. Well, first, I just want to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM New Haven. I'm Lucy Gelman, and today I am in the studio with some students from Students of Salaam. We're talking about a cooking class that is not on December 11th, but on December 10th. That is a Saturday. That fact has not changed as I've introduced the class. And it's one in what will hopefully be a series of events. So this is very exciting with two Syrian moms. And so I want to go back to the cooking class because we've spoken a little bit about that. But I guess your hope for these women, and in turn, if these women have shared some hopes with you, and I'll be talking to them at the event. But
So I think what these women would really hope for is to understand the New Haven community better and to feel more integrated in the New Haven community. And I think this cooking class specifically allows them to do so. There, as we've spoken about, cooking is a way and food is a way of showing their love. And I think they want to show their love for this community and for this country as a whole. It's very symbolic. And I think that's what they'll get out of this cooking class.
If I might speak on a hope that I have for the New Haven community.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when I first graduated from high school, I traveled to Jordan and I lived with a host family there for 6 weeks. And it was during the month of fasting, so Ramadan. And so every single night, it was incredibly important that the entire family and neighbors and friends and extended family gathered around the table and would all enjoy some of these dishes that Amna and Rashid have mentioned. There's also, a few other special Jordanian dishes. And this was an incredible experience for me coming from Montana, never having really experienced true Arab cooking before. And I am so excited for the New Haven community to have the opportunity to join in this as well, because not only is it a chance to really start to enjoy and grow in your taste buds, to really appreciate these foods, but it's also a chance to see what an incredible aspect of Arab culture food can be, as Amna and Rashid have both spoken to. And so I think just from not an outside perspective, but a perspective coming from Montana, coming as someone who hadn't experienced this before, I can say that it was a really, really special experience for me. And I'm excited for New Haven to have the chance to experience that as well when they learn from these Syrian mothers tomorrow.
And I'm curious, Amna and Rashid, if either of you have encountered either before Yale or even at Yale, you know, New Haven is a foodie town. That's something I talk about a lot on this show and at the New Haven Independent. But there are also people who are very picky, who say, give me my steak, give me my potato. If I'm feeling adventurous, I'll go for a piece of salmon, but it's going to be farm-raised salmon, like none of that fancy, you know, wild Atlantic stuff. So have you encountered that both, Amina, you were talking about how diverse your community was growing up, but did you have people say, oh, that looks like something that doesn't appear on my table, I'm not going to touch it?
Definitely. And I think maybe sometimes I've been one of those people.
Okay.
And I think that also just comes from my own dietary restrictions. I have a few stomach issues. But I think outside of that, I think it's understandable to think that, right? Like, it's not something that looks appealing to you or something that you're not familiar with. And I think you can see parallels with that with the current refugee crisis, where someone just doesn't understand what a refugee is or who they are as a person. But usually when you actually try that food that you never liked, you usually like it a lot. So I know I used to do that with watermelon. I never would like watermelon. I remember my mom tried on so many accounts to get me to try watermelon. And I always, always said no. And then one day, my friend dared me to taste it. This is in the middle of high school. I was already above 16. And I had, for 6 years of my life, I did not try watermelon. And so I took a piece of this watermelon and I fell in love. Like, to this day, I can eat a whole watermelon in one sitting. And I think that just goes to show how people can change their ideas and how food can really show you different sides of culture, different sides of a person.
And so, Rashid, you also talked about growing up with culinary traditions that were very, very important to you, and it sounds like to your family as well. And so, did you, we're having a little laugh and cry session, I think, in the studio. But I mean, have you also either met other students at Yale? This is your freshman year, so it's a huge time of transition, I would imagine,
sure.
Who have said, like, that's weird, or it's not for me, when in fact it's like, well, but if you tried it, perhaps it would become your new favorite food.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I definitely also think I've been that person before. I used to never like eggplant, and that's a very big part of like Afghani food is eggplant.
I don't like eggplant.
And it didn't seem very American to me. It wasn't like part of, like, what I'd eat in school or like out in at fast food places. So I just stayed away from it. And then when I tried it, oh man, I will bother my mom every time. We call it banjon. So I'm like, Mom, please make some banjon with the white sauce on it. That's like yogurt with some mint in it. So trying different things that look different is always hard because, you know, people are not very used to change, and change can be a very scary thing. But a lot of time taking a chance and taking that foot forward can have a lot of good outcomes.
And Stella, I see you wanting to get in. I can't help but thinking about how Brian Slattery, who's an author in New Haven, talks about the good juju of his Italian ancestors when he's cooking eggplant. And I think you're going there, but...
that is unfortunately not the direction
okay,
I was going.
Okay, that's okay.
I was simply going to say, at the same time, sometimes when you try a new food, it isn't your favorite thing. And that's okay too. And the good thing about this cooking class and the good thing about Arab cuisine in general is that it's very varied. So we've had Arab cuisine at some community events in the past, and we have had picky individuals show up. And luckily, everyone has always been able to find something they like. And often it's something that they just tried, but there might be two or three things they didn't like, but they might love the hummus, or they might love the pita chips,
or they might love
the baklava. And so, yeah, just to emphasize that, you know, maybe you're not going to enjoy every single thing you try, but there are many different ways to appreciate Arab food. And I guarantee you that there's something for everyone.
And was it the mothers? Was it Sumaya Khan who you're working with? Was it the group, or a little bit of all of those components that decided that tabbouleh would be a good dish to bring to the New Haven community in this first class?
So it was actually the group of us. We decided what would be practical to showcase at this cooking class, but also what the mothers specifically wanted to show as part of their culture. So we have tabbouleh, which is a parsley salad. We have fettuccine, which is a different type of salad that contains bigger chunks of vegetables alongside with toasted pita chips. It's my favorite type of salad.
So
ever.
She picks out the pita chips and just eats those.
Yeah, exactly. I love carbs. We also will be showcasing a special dish that's actually one of the mother's signature dish. It's a meat puff pastry dish mixed with cinnamon and with some cardamom. It tastes so great. I've tried it before, and I'm really excited for everyone here at this event to be able to try it too. And lastly, we'll also be having basbousa, which is traditionally a Middle Eastern dessert. It's made with semolina and simple sugars. It tastes so good.
And semolina flour is different. We should tell the listeners it's different because it's corn based, right?
So
maybe I might be wrong.
I believe so. I actually don't know myself.
Yeah. It's okay. We're having I'm pretty sure semolina is a corn based flour, but
I trust you.
But we will find out tomorrow. And so in this class, so I know that there's been overwhelming response from the New Haven community. There's actually a wait list.
Yeah.
Was that something that all of you were expecting?
Definitely not. No.
I mean, we did have some sense that this might attract more attention because who doesn't love food? But we definitely did not expect to have a 40-person wait list, I would say.
It's actually 50 now.
50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I think the message that Amina and I and Rashid, of course, would send to those individuals is, please keep an eye out for what's coming in the future, be it a cooking class, or we have some other really exciting events coming up next semester.
Yeah, we're probably going to be hosting a belly dancing and Depka dance class. And so we'll be hosting that probably at the New Haven Free Public Library, but we'd be really excited to have more members of the New Haven community join us for that.
And was the as our time winds down, I'm curious about talking about the New Haven Free Public Library, which is a wonderful space. It has an exhibition space where artists from New Haven show their work. Martha Brogan, the director of the NHFPL, is a fantastic person. So was that something that from the get-go you said, we don't want our space to be on Yale's campus? You know, it's the Ives branch, which is the main branch, is close to Yale's campus. But then there are these branches all over town, including in Fairhaven, Rashid, where I know you're tutoring, including in the Hill neighborhood, including in, on Dixwell. And so places that I think even I've heard, although no one has confirmed this for me, that Yale has historically told students not to go.
Well, to answer your first question about finding an off-campus location, absolutely. That was absolutely our goal, because we wanted this, wherever we held our events, to be a place that was very welcoming for all members of the community. And we understand that Yale can sometimes seem like something unapproachable. Perhaps it might, the institution itself might not seem like a place that, any individual can go. It absolutely is. Yale's a wonderful place, but we did want something that felt more accessible. And so growing up, my father always emphasized the importance of public libraries to me. And he's actually working on a project in Montana to help reorganize our public library and make it a more communal, vibrant space. And so kind of drawing on that project, I wanted to partner with the public library in to allow for us to get involved with the New Haven community and to help create a great community space there. With regard to the other locations, we did choose the Ives branch by the Green because it is much closer for us to get to and from. And we don't really have the financial capacity to necessarily be driving to every single event.
Right.
That we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I used to actually volunteer at my hometown library. And so I've always had a close affection for libraries. I used to have this young adult book blog that I was obsessed with, used to review books. And so I've always had an affection for libraries. But I think specifically why we chose the Ives branch is because I actually used to volunteer there, helping people do their taxes. And I saw it as a very community space and a very communal space and a space that a lot of members of the New Haven community accessed for resources, and we saw that as an opportunity to reach out to a larger population.
We have been really lucky to work with William Armstrong at the library, who has been an incredible contact.
He's been amazing.
Yeah. And Rashid?
Yeah, and one of my favorite parts about this event is it's kind of humanizing Yale, because growing up, even I had this sort of idealistic view about Yale that it was, you know, unattainable and whatnot, and I kind of see that in my students when they're like, they're like always talking to each other like, oh, he goes to Yale. And I kind of want to kind of show them that like Yale isn't this unattainable thing. It's like coming here has showed me that. And it's very humanistic, and it's looking to reach out to these groups and reach out to the New Haven community and bridge that gap. And that's my favorite part about this event, that it's that our first step forward to working towards that.
I couldn't have put it better, Austin.
Great. So we just have about 2 minutes left, and I want to ask the three of you what you're most looking forward to about this specific event. So this is the first, it sounds like this is the first specifically culinary event, even though you've had food at the other events before. And so I'd love to know from all of you. Amina, I see that you're like ready to get on the mic. So
I'm ready for the food.
First. Okay, great.
I'm so ready for the food right now. I've been craving Mediterranean and Arabian food, so I'm excited.
For me, it's definitely the fact that this is coming from an authentic source. Like, we have all these Americanized like fast food places that try to show us what Arab cuisine is. Mm. But I think having these Syrian moms do it is going to bring a whole another factor to it.
And Stella?
Sure. I'm excited for two things. I'm excited first to be able to showcase something really important and beautiful in these Syrian moms' lives that doesn't necessarily just emphasize tragedy. And I'm also extremely excited for the 30 New Haveners who will be there with us and have the opportunity to taste some great food and hopefully learn about SOS and stay involved with SOS, because I can't emphasize enough how much we really want to engage with New Haven, speak with New Haven, and just create a really fun, consistent space for New Haveners to come and celebrate with us.
Great. Well, I want to thank all of you so much. If you're just tuning in, I'm sorry you've missed it. But this was Kitchen Sink on WNHHLP 103.5 FM. If you have questions or comments or queries about this episode or any episode of Kitchen Sink, you can find us on iTunes or SoundCloud at WNHH Community Radio or Facebook at WNHH Community Radio. You can tweet to us at WNHHLP or tweet to me at LS Gelman if you really dug a show. If you really didn't dig a show, let me know. And you can also find this show on my website, lucygelman.com. So I want to thank all of you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all out there for listening. I think there are like 32 of you out there. So thank you so much. And I will see all of you and some other Students of Salaam members tomorrow.
Great.